You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
It is pretty quiet around the San Francisco Giants right now, which is a good thing because that means that the team is largely set, that they are ready to go to spring training, and spring training is fast approaching. So let's catch up with Chris Haft. I'm Allison Futter. Chris, I think that no news is good news in terms of the Giants because I think that they put together a pretty nice team going into spring training. I was reading your inbox on the Giants website, and I did find the question about Chris Carter very interesting. So Chris Carter is an outfielder / DH who hits a ton of home runs and doesn't do anything else really well except for strikeout. He's still out there, and he's a very interesting I guess a very intriguing, maybe tempting player. But you explain why he wouldn't be a good fit for the Giants. So can you tell us what your explanation on that was?
Sure thing, Allison. The Giants have never, well, at least since moving into AT&T Park, they really have emphasized, they really have emphasized, I should say, getting multi-talented guys. Not necessarily five tool players, if you will, but guys who do have more than one skill, guys who can put the ball in play offensively and, play some defense. Both qualities are, kind of essential there at AT&T Park, where the outfield's spacious. Line drive hit, it favors line drive, gap hitters, gap-to-gap type hitters, and defense is at a premium because they have to – so the pitchers have to, it's almost essential for the pitchers to, hold teams down offensively. So a player like Chris Carter just would not suit them. For those of some fans who are maybe a little bit longer in the tooth, just mentioning that reminds me of Bob Deere, an outfielder in the mid to late 80s who could hit home runs and couldn't do much else. And he went to Milwaukee and I think at that time Milwaukee was in the American League, and Rob Deere was a superb DH and exceeded 30 home runs, I should say, regularly. But with the Giants, he was just kind of like a curiosity, a guy who hit the ball real far and struck out a lot. And so the Giants can't have another Rob Deere, in this day and age. I think that's what Chris Carter would be with them.
Yeah, and it's not as if they have gaping holes, the Giants. Would you say, I'm sitting here thousands of miles away and not, paying close attention to the team as you are. Would you say that things are pretty satisfactory going into spring training with what they have pitching-wise from the lineup? I mean, if they started the season tomorrow, would you think that they're in a pretty good spot?
They would be in a pretty good spot, Allison. What they would want are some upgrades here and there. For guys to have better seasons. Buster Posey didn't hit for as much power as people would expect. I maintain that he's not a pure power hitter, even though he hits, third and fourth in the order a lot. He hit 14 home runs last year. I think they'd like to see him, get to more around closer to the 20 range. But, you do have to wonder if he is a pure power hitter. That's no criticism of him. He's just a good, solid all-around hitter who I think, legitimately should hit 300 every year and, move the offense along that way. They'd like to see Joe Panik kind of, revive his bat a little bit. Last year, he was the toughest player in the league, maybe all baseball, to strike out. But I think they'd like, in fact, for that contact to result in base hits a little more often. Of course, left field is still a question. And in center field, they hope Denard Span can last the whole year. Same with Hunter Pence in the right. But so health really is their main issue, as it is for a lot of teams at this point in the year.
Yeah, absolutely. Every podcast I do, basically the overlying theme is, well, this guy has to stay healthy and this guy has to stay healthy. And that's nothing new for anybody. Okay, so totally changing the topic here. You wrote this fantastic article for Sports on Earth about your interaction with Charles Schulz, the creator of Peanuts. As a child, you wrote to him. And of course, yesterday was Martin Luther King Day. So we all celebrated the birthday of Martin Luther King Jr. And this had to do with that. So tell us, can you just tell us, just the premise of the article and your experience of corresponding with him as a child.
Yeah, you know, I went to a racially mixed elementary school. It was a public school, and my worldview, you know, at age nine, you know, just inevitably included, a diverse mixture of people, of kids. And I loved reading Peanuts as a youth, into my adulthood, really. And but then, at that time, when I was in fourth grade, I just didn't understand why there weren't, children of color, so to speak, in the comic strip. And so I forget if it was both my parents or just my dad said, it might be a good idea just to write to Mr. Schultz and see what he says. And so I wrote him a letter. I didn't think anything of it. And then a few weeks later, I got this response. This is like 1968. I'm revealing my age here. But, and he essentially said this, I think it's a great idea, but I just don't know what to do. And he said, I don't want to feel like I'm patronizing Negroes, which is what African Americans were referred to at the time. And his last line of the letter, which is pretty brief but succinct, he said, I don't know what the solution is. But as it turned out, that was like June 1968, and at the end of July, he introduced Franklin, who really wasn't a major character, but he was obviously Negro, and that's the solution he eventually did arrive at. I don't take any credit for this happening. That's kind of attributed to a school teacher in Los Angeles who, I guess, started a with me, it was just one letter. I guess she started a correspondence with him. But it was interesting. The Washington Post did a story where they ran a copy of the letter, or one of the letters he wrote to her. I think they had been maybe in the first one. And it was the same letter he wrote to me, word for word. So I don't know if he had like a little form letter prepared for people like me who were, because he had to have been hearing from hundreds, maybe even thousands of people about this. So it was just, the approach of Martin Luther King Day, it just awakened all these various memories in me all of a sudden. I had to dig. I started looking for the letter, which I knew I hadn't lost, but I had misplaced. And so I dug through a bunch of, I guess you would say, personal archives and found it lying there in the middle of, a bunch of, not trash, but some odds and ends.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that struck me, I think, is even if it was a form letter, and even if he did, use that to send to different people, the fact that that he did it, and it kind of makes me sad in that today it would be so different. There'd be so many, if he was on Twitter, or if there's a way to contact him through social media, it would be so much less dignified. It would be so much. People would be so much ruder. I mean, it just is the way it is. I'm sure that he did get some, unfavorable mail back in the day also. But people were just a little bit more refined. Your name was attached to it, and there just seemed to be a lot more dignity taking place back then. But just the fact that he, you were a kid, and he really didn't have to do any of that. And it doesn't matter if he had the words already typed out. That was pretty telling about the kind of guy that he was, that he really did care about the fact that other people cared about this.
Yeah, I'd say so. He knew what he had going with the Peanuts, franchise.
Right.
I will say, looking at the letter, it wasn't like a flat-out form letter. I'm holding the letter in my hand right now. I'm holding it to the window, and I see where he kind of typed over a misspelling.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, I mean, and his signature on the letter does not look like it came from a machine or anything. I think he actually, wrote his name, which is kind of nice. And it appears on a nice little Peanut stationery. It's Charlie Brown wearing one of his little woe is me expressions. And he's got his kite flying string wrapped around Snoopy's doghouse in another failed attempt to fly a kite.
Oh, that's so cool. Well, I'm glad that you had that experience with him. And to bring this back to baseball for a minute, I have noticed just in the time that I've been in Major League Baseball, it's been 20 years now, and I feel like interviews that went on with players back when Jackie Robinson Day first came about, and They started making a really big deal out of April 15th, and it seemed like there were some African-American players that didn't really know a lot about the history of Jackie Robinson and the history of African-Americans coming into baseball. And I feel like today players are so much more conscientious, a lot more interested, and it seems like they're a lot more appreciative now, maybe with the knowledge that they've gained. Have you noticed that over time, that it's become, the awareness has increased?
I'd say so, Allison. You know, and the fact that this is an annual, observation, a pursuit or whatever, if you will, for baseball. And it's rightfully so. It's not limited to African-American players. I've talked to several Caucasian players who appreciate baseball history, and they're, and this is going to sound schmaltzy, but they are truly honored to wear number 42 because they understand, the man's place in history, and, it supersedes baseball history. It was just what Jackie Robinson did was just so monumental because of, what was going on racially at the time, but also the hold that baseball had on the public at the time. If you were going to make a statement, you were going to make it through the national game, and that was one way to make a big statement. And it's something that's obviously going to live through time.
Yeah, I think we've come a long way, so it's very encouraging to see. So, okay, interesting stuff, Chris. Thank you so much. Appreciate the conversation. Catch up with you.
Thank you, Allison.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go. Every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.